Where do you see yourself at 65? On the golf course or behind a cash register? The fact is that the age of retirement in America is moving up, not down, for the first time in a century. While employment dropped for every other age group, people 55 and over picked up nearly 3 million jobs in the past 3 years, and a recent survey of workers over 50 by the AARP found that nearly half expect to keep working into their 70s. There are a lot of reasons for that. Many older people stay on the job or go back to work to stay active. But there's no choice for many others who face rising health care costs and the evaporation of IRA nest eggs and pensions. And while good-paying jobs are hard to find for everybody, some employers actively recruit older workers because they're often cheaper, more flexible, and more responsible than their younger counterparts. This hour on Talk of the Nation, we'll look at the aging of the workforce, why people keep working, and what employers get out of it. A bit later, we'll have some illogical linguistic fun with the art of the oxymoron. We have an email challenge for that segment. What's the truest, most profound paradox you've heard? And let's get military intelligence and jumbo shrimp out of the way right now. The email address is totn@npr.org. First, though, we want to hear from older workers. If you plan to stay in the labor pool after 65, or if you're already working in your golden years, why? Is it a financial necessity, a question of psychological fulfillment, or something else? And for employers, are there qualities older workers bring that you find especially useful? Our phone number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. You can email us at totn@npr.org. And joining us now from WGBH in Boston is Joseph Quinn, professor of economics at Boston College, dean of the College of Arts and Sciences, and welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you very much.
So you wrote that for 100 years in America, the age of retirement has steadily been going down. What's been happening?
Well, this is true. You can find data back to 1880 right up through the mid-1980s that shows for men steady declines in the labor force participation rate, the proportion of the group that's actually out there working.
Mm-hmm.
And what is dramatic is how that long-term trend slammed to a halt in the mid-1980s. And since then, older men have been, the trend towards earlier and earlier retirement is over. Older men, if anything, have been retiring slightly later over the last two decades.
So this is epical. What's driving this trend?
Well, there are two types of explanations. One is a cyclical one that looks at the fact that in the last 15 years of the 20th century, the economy was very strong. Unemployment rate dropped from about 10% in the early 80s down to 5% by the late 80s, and eventually down into the 4%, the lowest rate since the Vietnam War. So one explanation is it's cyclical. The strong labor demand, demand for all types of labor, including older workers, is what brought this long-term trend to a temporary halt.
Mm-hmm.
The implication of this would be when the economy becomes less strong, these inevitable long-term trends towards earlier and earlier retirement will continue.
Mm-hmm.
The alternative explanation is that it's not just the economy, although the economy is important, but in fact there have been a number of permanent changes in the retirement environment, changes that aren't going away, that are primarily responsible for this.
And those
would
be?
And that's what I believe.
And
well, there's a number of them. Mandatory retirement, for example, used to apply to about half the workers in America. In the late 1970s, the earliest age of mandatory retirement that was legal was moved from 65 to 70, and then in the mid-80s, it was eliminated altogether for the vast majority of American workers. That's good news if you want to keep working.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, there have been some very important changes, subtle changes, in Social Security incentives. Social Security used to penalize workers who continued to work beyond age 65, and I could explain how that happens if you'd like. That's no longer the case.
Mm-hmm.
Similarly, in employer pensions, defined benefit pension plans, the old-time union plans that were so familiar back in the old days, also include very strong age-specific work disincentives. If you work beyond this age, your lifetime benefits go down, not up. In contrast, defined contribution plans, where the employer and you put money in a Fidelity account and it then grows, they have no age-specific incentives. And defined contribution plans have becoming more and more important. in America. So there's another important work disincentive or retirement incentive that's not eliminated. Defined benefit plans are still important, but it's diminished.
And three
final points.
Okay.
People are living longer.
Yep.
People are living healthier. And the occupational structure is changing in a way that makes continued work late in life more possible.
And however, it's possible, but for some people it's not only possible, it's vital. They need to do this.
Oh, absolutely. There's no question about it. Another topic that I've studied, in addition to when people retire, is how people retire. How do people leave their career jobs? The old stereotypical retirement is that it is an event. And someone goes from full-time work on a career job to no longer working and never works again. An alternative view is that many people, in fact, retire gradually, in stages, using bridge jobs between a full-time career job and complete labor force withdrawal. In this view of the world, retirement isn't an event, it's a process. And what we found in our research is that many Americans, I estimate between a third and a half, and I suspect that's an underestimate, at minimum, a significant minority of older Americans retire in stages. Hmm. If you ask who's retiring in stages, who's retiring in this non-stereotypical fashion, it's people at both ends of the socioeconomic scale, for just the two reasons you implied. People at the upper end, who perhaps could afford to retire, choose not to. Why? Quality of life reasons. I like making a contribution. I enjoy my fellow workers. I have interesting work with interesting people. But similarly, at the lower end of the socioeconomic scale are a number of people who don't leave the labor force when they leave their career jobs because they can't. And their answers, why do you keep working, basically say, because I have to. They reference medical insurance. I need the job to make ends meet, and so on. Mm-hmm. So both stories are out there. Both scenarios are very important. One's kind of a happy story, and one is a less happy story.
Well, let's get some listeners involved in the conversation. Our phone number is 800-989-8255, or email us, TOTN@npr.org. And we'll begin with Don, who's on the line with us from Wilmington, Ohio.
Well, hi, Neil. How are you? I listen to your show a lot, and I really like it.
Well, thanks very much. It's kind of you.
Well, I'm one of those guys that did retire fairly early. I retired. I'm 55 now. Be 56 in October, and I was 30 years an educator at Wilmington High School.
What'd you teach?
And, I taught the first 20 years. I was mainly American history. I also taught some English. But the last 10 years, I was also the school librarian. We did local cable television as well. I did a lot of things that way, and also I did most of the computer work in the building as well.
So what did you do after you retired?
Well, my wife is a transportation manager for a local company, and she came home one day and she said, "We need a courier driver. You're it." So I do that a few days a week. And the other thing, I know it sounds strange, but I always loved firearms. I love to shoot, and I love to hunt. I always wanted to be a gun dealer, so I'm a gun dealer also, and I work out of my home. And I make a little bit of money that way. Don't expect to get rich, but it's a lot of fun.
A lot of men jokingly call their wives the boss. In your case, it's pretty apt.
Yeah, she is truly my boss, both at work and at home. And of course, we've been married since we were just kids, and I could never imagine not being married to her.
Well, Joseph Quinn, Don's story, it seems to be a pretty good illustration of what you're talking about.
It is indeed, and it shows that the word retirement actually often confuses more than enlightens. Retirement means so many things to so many different people. Don described himself as retired, presumably because he left that long-term career job as a high school teacher. But, of course, he's still in the labor market. As a matter of fact, he's got two jobs now, one driving a couple days a week, and he's also self-employed with his own business. So is he retired? Is he not retired? Well, I'd say yes and no.
And do you still get checks from the whatever pension plan you may have had as a teacher?
The Ohio State Teacher Retirement System, yes, I do. And that is my main source of income, aside, of course, from my wife's income, which mm-hmm. is now quite a bit more than mine. And I don't think I could do these other things. I could not have retired if I was not part of the STRS. It's really a strong system. I am grateful that I made a good decision years ago to become an educator. I loved what I did, but it just the pressure got to be pretty heavy on me there the last few years, and so it was time to make a change, and that's what I did.
Well, Don, congratulations.
Well, thank you, Neil.
Appreciate it.
Congratulations on a wonderful program.
Thank you so much. One of the groups that's working to keep older people active in the job market is the AARP, which is somewhat ironic, since until recently they were known as the American Association for Retired Persons. Joining us here in Studio 3A is Christine Donahue. She's Associate Executive Director of the AARP's membership group. Nice of you to come in today.
Thanks, Neil.
Did the increasing retirement age prompt that name change?
Yes, it did. And as a matter of fact, we passed a milestone last year in that more than 50% of our membership is still working. So it was a good thing we changed our name.
So what kind of programs does AARP run to connect older workers with employers?
Well, we have a number of programs. AARP has been known for our advocacy for older workers for some time. We're rather famous for our work against age discrimination. But in the AARP Foundation, which I'm also the director of, we have had a 35-year program called the Senior Community Service Employment Program, which is a program funded by the Department of Labor and AARP. And we currently have sites in 90 different locations across the United States and Puerto Rico. And over the 35 years of the program, we have retrained and placed over 350,000 older workers in jobs. And recently, just last month, we had a very exciting first in that the Home Depot and AARP announced a joint partnership wherein we will be supplying older workers through our SESEP program to Home Depot for their stores. They're a very progressive employer. They want to grow. They've got 175 stores they're going to open, and they need 35,000 additional workers this year, and we're going to help supply some of those.
So a lot of these jobs are like that in the service sector?
Yes, they are. And actually, Home Depot will be hiring people with skills like plumbers, electricians, landscape designers, as well as regular associates and customer service representatives.
Now, do you get a strong response from employers when you offer these kind of partners? What do they tell you?
Neil, when we announced this deal with Home Depot, our phones started ringing off the hook. And I can't tell you, we had about 25 of the largest corporations in the country saying, we want to do the same thing. As Dr. Quinn talked about, within the next 10 years, 43% of the workforce is going to be retiring.
Mm-hmm.
And furthermore, the age cohort...
Or retirement age.
Exactly. Yeah. Eligible for retirement. That's correct. Thanks for that correction. And in the same time, the age cohort 24 to 35 is shrinking. So with projections of a modest economic growth, we could be looking at a shortage of 10 million workers by the year 2010. And so companies are waking up to that.
But I can hear many younger workers or who want to be workers snorting derisively and saying, you old people, you're taking my job.
I actually think there's going to be enough jobs for everybody. And I think there's a wonderful mix in the workforce when you have both younger workers and older workers. And Dr. Quinn expressed that very eloquently. The older worker brings something special in terms of experience, mentoring younger workers. And I also want to mention that Home Depot and other employers have found that older workers have a wonderful work ethic that they sometimes have a harder time finding among younger workers.
Well, we're talking about the graying of the workforce with Christine Donahue of AARP. And Joseph Quinn, who's with us from the campus there at Boston College. When we come back from a short break, we're also going to take more of your phone calls. 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. You can also email us, TOTN@npr.org. And let me remind you about our email challenge. We're going to be talking about oxymorons later and the truth that sometimes lies underneath the contradiction. If you've got a favorite, email it to us. TOTN@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about working into your golden years, the reasons both fiscal and psychological to stay on the job past the age of retirement, and the new interest employers are taking in older workers. Of course, you're invited to join us. If you're an employer, is worker age a bonus or a drawback? And if you're facing the choice between a leisurely retirement and a weekly paycheck, what are the deciding factors for you? Our phone number is 800-989-8255. And if the phrase working in retirement gives you the giggles, make sure to stay tuned for our oxymoron segment that's coming up later in the hour. For now, email us your favorite witty impossibility, TOTN at npr.org. Our guests are Joseph Quinn, a professor of economics at Boston College, who joins us from the studios of WGBH in Boston, and here in Studio 3A, Christine Donahue of the AARP. And let's get another caller on the line. Gordon joins us from Tolleson, Arizona.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm very happy to hear your program because it sort of fits my situation. I'm in my early 50s. I just retired from practicing law, and I was thinking of changing careers because I do want to continue working. I don't want to retire at 65, and certainly now not now. I want to keep on going. And I was wondering, was there even any prospects? Are they all hiring younger people? So your program was a great shot in the arm. But my question is, are there any resources, programs for people like me, people who are thinking of changing jobs, what we can go into, how to go about it? Is there anything you can recommend?
Christine Donahue, this seems to be more up your alley.
Yes, I think if you go to our website, aarp.org, and click on the information about older workforce, you should be able to find some good information there.
And does he have to have paid his $25 to get access to that?
It's only $12.50 a year, Neil.
You're already in, Gordon?
I'm already in.
All right.
Thanks,
then.
Gordon.
Okay.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks very much for the phone call. Joseph Quinn, I wanted to ask you that isn't there an aspect, a lot of the time when older people retired, left the workforce, what they did to stay active was not to go get a job, but go work in civic organizations, a charity, and volunteer groups. What happens when those groups now have to compete with employers?
Well, I think that's an excellent point. And one thing that I, as an economist, have to constantly remind myself is that our definition of contribution, which is working in the paid labor force, is really quite limited. And these dramatic increases, even more so among women than among men, of older workers staying in the labor force is only the tip of the iceberg, because in addition to that, not counted as part of the labor force, are all the older folks who are contributing in so many other ways through volunteer organizations, within the family, taking care of grandchildren and neighbors, and so on. And you bring up an excellent point. This huge baby boom generation, of which I'm at the leading edge, is about to reach what used to be typical retirement age. And a really interesting question is whether the volunteer sector is going to make opportunities available that will take advantage of this very talented pool of older workers, some of whom may not want to continue in the paid labor market.
Let's get another caller on the line. George is with us, and George is calling from Mount Hood, Oregon.
Good afternoon.
Afternoon.
As I understand it, the reason that the retirement age is increasing every year, I think it's up to 65 in several months now, is that there is insufficient funds coming into the Social Security program. That being the case, I noticed that they cap the income that is taxable for Social Security. I think it's $87,500 right now. Why are we doing that? Why don't we take the cap off? Why should a CEO who is making $6 million, $20 million, $250 million a year and certainly does not need Social Security, why can't his income be uncapped? Why can't all incomes be uncapped? Right now, the Social Security burden is falling on the middle class and lower middle class.
Joseph Quinn, is George's premise correct?
Well, I'll give you two responses. One, we've already taken your suggestion with respect to the Medicare part of that FICA tax. In fact, all earned income is subject to that 1.45 for you and your employer tax. But you are correct on the other part of it, the part that goes towards retirement benefits. It is capped. And other people have suggested doing this, and I would point out only the following, that the way the rules are certainly are set up now, that the benefits that you receive are a function of your average earnings over 35 years. And if we didn't change that rule, you would have the Bill Gates of the world both contributing on vast amounts and getting annual Social Security checks of millions of dollars a year. So I think the proposal that some listeners might want to make is a combination of taking off the cap, but then changing the benefit rules so there's a cap there We certainly don't want Social Security providing millions of dollars of annual income to wealthy Americans.
And Christine,
I just want to make the point that this caller starts to get at, which is that as far as AARP is concerned, providing jobs for older workers is what we call a triple play. That is, it's a win-win-win. It's a win for the individual if they want to stay active and keep working. It's a win for the employer because they get mature, experienced workforce with a good work ethic. And it's also good, as we were just talking, for taxpayers because you still have folks contributing to the tax rolls.
So even if you're getting Social Security, you pay FICA tax?
Dr. Quinn, what's the story there?
Yes, indeed. If you're working, you can continue to contribute.
Right. Social Security benefits increased from that money.
Yeah. Right. Okay, George. Thanks very much. It was a good question.
You're welcome.
All right. Let's go now to Jennifer, and Jennifer's with us from Fayetteville, North Carolina.
Beautiful Fayetteville. Yes. my comment or question is, I'm one of those younger people who cannot get a job because the older people are not retiring. I'm an academic, so I have a PhD, and I cannot get a job. I'm working two adjunct faculty jobs right now and making less than $2,000 a month.
And it must be very frustrating.
Yes.
Joseph Quinn, she is certainly not alone, and a lot of people say, you know, you look back at the days when Social Security was first instituted. Well, it was during the Depression. One of the ideas was to get older people to retire to make room for the Jennifers of the world.
Well, I guess I would respond in the following way. I don't think it's the obligation of older active workers to step aside for this reason. I mean, one of the obligations of macroeconomists and the folks who influence the macroeconomy is to provide jobs for folks that want jobs. And I agree that we don't always do this, and currently, with the current unemployment rates, this is one of those eras right now. But I think it's a mistake to look at this as a zero-sum game, that there's a fixed number of jobs out there, and if someone else has one, someone else doesn't have one. Because, in fact, the number of jobs in America is endogenous to the system, and enlightened policies could increase the number of jobs. In fact, America, certainly compared to some of our European allies, has been very successful in integrating millions and millions of people into the labor force.
Jennifer?
In the abstract, I think he's absolutely right, but I have to say that going with a PhD, I can't pick up a job at a mall, I can't get a job as a secretary because I'm overqualified. So I'm in this loop where I can't get into the field that I spent, you know, 20 years of my life studying to get into, and yet no other field will take me because they assume I've trained so much for something else that I won't stick with them, that I'll get bored and move on. You know, so there are jobs out there, but even those jobs won't take me.
Yeah. I wish I could have – I don't know what to tell you. But thanks for the call.
Okay.
And good luck.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to thank Christine Donahue from AARP for being with us today. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, Neil.
And she was with us here in Studio 3A. A quick email question from Rebecca Pfizer. Statistically, are retirees filling more skilled or unskilled jobs? Joseph Quinn?
Well, one of the things I've looked at in studying bridge jobs, these transitional jobs, and comparing the characteristics of the new job with the old career job, is there does tend to be a movement towards from white-collar to blue-collar a bit and from skilled to unskilled jobs. So although many people remain in jobs that are similar to what they used to have, to the extent that people move to different types of jobs, it's kind of down the scale rather than up the scale on average.
Let's get a phone call now from Daryl, and Daryl is in Ronkonkoma, New York.
Hi, Neil. I love your program.
Thank you.
I'm 74 years old. I never want to retire. I don't think human beings do well being retired. And I have two jobs. For many years, I worked for a large corporation, 25 years,
mm-hmm.
and then, quote, retired from them, became a teacher, and taught for 12 years in public schools, and I was a director of a youth organization. And most recently, I have a job as the credit supervisor for a national company, and I also appear as Walt Whitman in schools, Civil War roundups, libraries, and so forth.
So you go do Leaves of Grass and that sort of thing?
I do. I read from the poetry, and since I look like Walt Whitman in his old age, the good gray poet, I'm the good white poet. I have a long white beard. I'm able to present myself as Whitman to young people and talk about, quote, my life, unquote.
That must be a fascinating job.
It is absolutely the greatest thing that I've done in my relatively long life.
Daryl raises an interesting point, Joseph Quinn. There's so many cases you hear about people who work for a corporation for 30, 35 years. They retire, and suddenly it seems like 2 weeks later they have a heart attack. If you keep yourself busy, you're going to be healthier?
I've observed.
Well, I think...
Let me ask that to Joseph Quinn. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I think that's generally true. I think it's a matter of, in a case of the current caller, of mental health. And he is one who enjoys staying active in the paid labor force. And I think this is fabulous. I think it's a tremendous story. On the other hand, one of the things I've learned about older Americans, and of course this would be true of almost any other group, is this tremendous variety and variance in what people are like and what people want to do. And there are other folks who have worked until 62 or 65, retire in the old style way, never work again, and are happy as can be. They're active, they're visiting their children around the country, they're working in soup kitchens, and so on and so forth. So this is certainly a case where one size most definitely does not fit all.
And I guess the point to be made is that it's nice to have choices. Again, there are a lot of elderly people who are working because they may not have a choice. Daryl, we're pleased that you're not one of them.
Well, a year ago, I walked from France across Spain to the Atlantic Ocean, so I do keep active.
Okay, well, as Walt Whitman, did you do that?
No, that was a 1,000-year-old religious pilgrimage to Santiago de Compostela in Spain.
Well, congratulations, Daryl.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Enjoyed.
Retirees who want to get back into the job market and are comfortable with the Internet can find a number of websites to connect them with interested employers. Radio Shack is one of many large companies reaching out to these workers. Joining us now from Radio Shack's corporate headquarters in Fort Worth, Texas, is spokesman Charles Hodges. Nice of you to be with us today.
Good afternoon, Neil.
So why are you looking for older workers?
Well, there's actually several reasons. We actively recruit older workers to fill Radio Shack's full and part-time retail openings. We have over 7,000 stores across the country, so we're constantly looking for good, qualified employees to fill those positions. But primarily, while we're looking at seniors and feel that's a very important part of our employee base, which also includes young males and females,
mm-hmm.
They have a lot of flexibility in their schedules.
They don't have kids.
They don't have children at home. They don't have other responsibilities like that. And in our environment, we have relatively small stores, so they don't have a lot of employees at each store. So flexibility in scheduling is very, very important. And the ability to adjust your schedule to accommodate other coworkers is critical.
And some people have pointed out that also because they don't have children around, they're not taking little Johnny to the doctor all the time.
That's very true. And certainly we have a lot of employees who do have families and children at home. And that's important, too, because the bulk of our customers are families with children. So that brings me to the second part of the equation, and that is when we have people that come into our stores, our brand proposition is you've got questions, we've got answers.
Mm-hmm.
And you may think, well, an older person may be construed as someone who doesn't have the technical knowledge and savvy that a younger person might have. But in fact, we have a tremendous training program in which all of our employees become experts in the products and services that we offer and can deliver to that brand proposition day in and day out. So there's some comfort in dealing with an older, more experienced, seasoned employee for a lot of people. They come in, they feel that what they're being told is true and accurate and will work for them versus perhaps dealing with a younger employee where they may not quite have that same confidence level. So we like to have a good mix within our stores, young and old, so we can accommodate the needs and preferences of all of our customers.
We're speaking with Charles Hodges of Radio Shack and with Joseph Quinn at Boston College. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another caller in. This is Chris, and Chris is on the line from San Francisco.
Hi, Neil. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm actually a member of the younger workforce. I'm in my early 30s. And I just had a comment, sort of backing up what Mr. Hodges just said. Regarding customer service, when I walk into a store, this may be sort of a form of reverse ageism, but when I walk into a store and I find an older worker, I feel that I'm often treated better. And I'm wondering if anyone would have a comment regarding the fact that I think some of the younger workforce, in terms of just dealing with customer service, we find so many retail establishments, phone services that are run by computer, and the idea of customer service has really sort of dropped out of our society, and I think that, older workers are more familiar with that.
Well, rather than put Mr. Hodges on the spot there, why don't we put that to Joseph Quinn?
Well, again, I certainly wouldn't want a gross generalization about younger workers in the service industry, but the point that's been made several times and is so true is this elderly workforce, which I'm about to join myself, is a group of talented, experienced people, many of whom would like to stay active. And smart employers like Radio Shack and Home Depot and others have taken advantage of this. And the ones who do want to stay in the labor market, the ones who have the appropriate skills, are a tremendous addition to the workforce. Christine made the point earlier, it's a win-win-win situation. I think it is. For workers who want to stay active, but perhaps not full-time, this is a golden opportunity. For the firm smart enough to hire them, it's a golden opportunity. And for the nation as a whole, it's good. People worry a lot about the burdens of a aging population. But how much of a burden it is depends on the amount of goods and services that we're producing. And the more folks who decide to stay in this labor market, the more there is to be divvied up, however we decide to do it.
Chris, thanks very much for the question.
Thank you.
And Charles Hodges, we just have a little time left, but I do want to ask you, when these older workers come in, do you offer them health care?
Absolutely. They're offered the same benefits that that the rest of our employees are offered. It's certainly no different.
So they are, it's a win-win situation for you, then?
Oh, absolutely. And actually, the previous caller's question is something we deal with every day, customer service.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the type of retailer we are, the consumer electronics industry is really not a self-serve environment. And we find that many times we're helping answer questions for people who perhaps obtained equipment in a mass merchant environment and did not know how to make things work once they got home or found they didn't have everything they needed. So when people come into our stores, they are engaged and they're helped regardless of what their questions are.
Charles Hodges, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you very much. Appreciate
it. Charles Hodges, Radio Shack spokesperson, was with us from company headquarters in Fort Worth. And also thanks to Joseph Quinn, dean of the College of Arts and Sciences at Boston College, professor of economics there. He joined us from member station WGBH in Boston. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed it.
When we come back from a short break, what do compassionate conservatives and visionary Democrats have in common? Well, each side considers one of those phrases an oxymoron. Serious fun with verbal paradox after the break. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.